Today on the Cooligans, I'm joined by my guest co-host, Michele Giannone of MLS on Apple TV. Say hi, Michele.
Hi.
Okay. In segment number one, we are talking about Inter Miami and their recent draw to Red Bull at their new stadium. We try to figure out, is Inter Miami in a little bit of trouble? In segment number two, we talk about our biggest surprises and disappointments in MLS this season. We get into a lot of depth in there. And segment number three,
we talk about our fears about the USMNT, and we had a therapy session about Italy.
That's right. They all need it right now. We're here to help. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. So I am back from vacation. I took a break of, how long was I away, Carter? 2 weeks. I was away for 2 weeks, and it's the first time I've taken a vacation in 3 years since my son was born. He just turned three. So I took paternity. I really didn't even take a vacation. I took paternity leave. So I don't know if that necessarily counts as a vacation.
No, that's it doesn't.
But much needed, I gotta say. I honestly didn't go anywhere. I just caught up on sleep. And also, people listening, welcome, Michele Giannone of Major League Soccer. That's on Apple TV. Yes. So I feel pretty refreshed and ready. When's the last time you went on vacation, Michele?
I can't remember.
Really?
I was going to say it must be nice to go on a vacation because I have no idea when was the last time I got a vacation.
Interesting. I mean, I think people maybe misses a peek behind the curtain of like just working in soccer, working in football in general, kind of all across the world. It's kind of difficult to find, just similar to the players, like the players' fixture congestion.
Yeah.
We got to deal with the same thing as well, right? They're like the matches never end. Whether it's like, you know, if there's a break in MLS, then it's the international break, and then you're covering the national team,
yes,
or something along those lines. So it never ends, and that's why we're having this conversation, to really just focus on how the people who work behind the scenes, who are not just the athletes, struggle just as much as the athletes. I know you agree, Michele.
I agree. I do agree. Completely agree. It's funny because I will never, ever, ever, ever complain about my job.
Sure.
It's my dream job. If you give me a lifetime contract to do what I'm doing right now, I will sign it right now.
Wow.
I love it. But it takes a toll. It takes a toll. It's a long season. And again, when we have like an international break, then you're covering the national team.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, then the summer comes. And in my case, MLS season stops. But then it's a month nonstop work with the World Cup.
All right.
And we all know like, how much traveling takes toll on you. And that my point was, I will never, ever, ever complain, but the traveling every weekend takes a toll.
Yeah.
And then when you get a break, and people say, well, why don't you go on a vacation? Because I don't want to travel anymore.
I've been on planes all damn day.
Every year. I just want to stay home on my couch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Order a pizza. And that's it. That's all I want to do.
That's what I did. And weirdly enough, so as soon as I took my break started, we filmed it. We had an interview that aired, I think, with Brad Sims. We filmed the interview with Brad Sims from the CEO of NYCFC. And then my break started like 2 days after that. And then I got sick. I got a cold that like Friday. But part of me was like, yeah, this is great. Now I'm forced to not feel guilty about not doing anything. I can just sleep. And I had about 2 days of just like sleeping through the afternoon. And I'm like, I haven't done this since my son was born. I mean, on top of having all the soccer work and stuff like that. So, yeah, I feel good. I feel refreshed. I'm glad to be joined by my guest co-host. Alexis is away on a gig, but you're stepping in, so I appreciate it, brother.
No, it's an honor. You know how much I love you guys. And I don't think I've ever replied to a text faster than I replied to you. Like, can you? Yes. And then it was like, okay, when is this? Monday? Oh, yeah, I can. I replied without knowing when was this. I'll make it work.
That means so much. Thank you so much, Miguel. Because you did respond quickly. And then even if, you know, you say how much I love you guys. And as comedians, you don't become a stand-up comedian because you feel loved by people, right? Because you're desperately looking for it. So, you know what? I don't know how much you love us. Feel free to express that. Feel free to express that. Anytime you want to hop over this table and kiss me, you're more than welcome to, Michele.
Good.
Okay.
Consent.
That's right. The offer is there. Okay. My wife watching, she's going to be quite surprised. But, you know, we all learn things. That's what the show is about.
There you go.
Anyway, welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco. I am joined by my guest co-host today of MLS Season Pass on Apple TV, the one and only Michele Giannone.
No more Season Pass.
No more Season Pass. That's just MLS on Apple TV.
That's right. Because there's no more paywall.
There's no more. I mean, there's one less paywall.
Yeah, one less. But you get Formula One now.
That's right.
Come on, hey.
I know, and I will say, I mean, when it comes to like just the programming on Apple TV, it's honestly some of the best as far as streaming services go.
I'm going to tell people, if you're not watching this show, go stop watching us.
Go
right now. Apple TV, Slow Horses.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Yeah.
One of the best shows. I've read the books because they're based on books and novels. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Slow Horses on Apple TV.
All right, there it is.
Great show.
Look, he's not even contractually obligated to say that.
I work for MLS. I don't work for Apple TV. I'm just giving them a favor here.
Yeah. That's good.
They need customers. You know, Apple is not selling birds.
They're struggling. Yeah, the MacBook Neo needs a couple more purchases. But yes, and when it comes to drama, MLS offers just as much as slow horses, I imagine. Slow caballos. Anyway, excited about today's show. It's gonna be a lot of Major League Soccer today. And we're also gonna talk some U.S. Men's National Team because Michele has been covering the national team for years, so we can swap a couple stories there as well. But today, let's start with Inter Miami and Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi has not lost a step. He is fit. He is scoring. He is still contributing. But Inter Miami's problem is not Lionel Messi, right? It seems to be some of the players that are around them. My main concern, especially since our guest today was at the game, are Inter Miami kind of like, you know, are they in a little bit of trouble, or were the Red Bulls just that good and maybe they're a bit more of a threat than we actually think?
This is the top topic.
Miami's a little bit in trouble, but it's fixable. But Red Bulls are really good.
Okay. So there were a couple moments, and we were talking about like Julian Hall early in the season. That move, just that little move to shake Rodrigo De Paul, I'm just like, okay. One thing I remember hearing Julian Hall talk about the striker that he wants to be like is Lewandowski. And I saw that moment and I'm like, this guy, just a little bit like Robert Lewandowski, like very just subtle little dip of the shoulder. I completely shook a World Cup winning defensive midfielder. So you were at the game, you're covering this game, at the new stadium. Inter Miami haven't won yet, at their new stadium, which is just a fun name. Why I call it
the new stadium.
But your quick thoughts after that 2-2 draw.
Where do you want to start, Miami or Red Bulls?
Let's start with Miami.
Miami, okay. I'm going to say something shocking. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
Prepare yourself.
Look, I'm going to hit the button. Go for it.
Okay. They miss Alba and Busquets.
Holy smokes. And this is why we bring in the MLS on Apple TV guy.
Mic drop. Listen, no. This is obviously it's a basic. We can start from there.
Yeah.
No, but I just think that, and you can ask me, hey, because people ask, how can you, for example, miss Busquets in midfield if he was a very slow player? For example, because Miami's biggest problem right now, and we saw it on Red Bull New York. That's the way you have to say their name. Red Bull New York is a defensive transition. Miami suffers a lot because both DePaul and Bright, normally they got out of position a lot. They're faster than Busquets. But Busquets was so smart. Of course, we're talking about, in my opinion, and I'm Italian.
Okay.
I love Pirlo. But I think Busquets is the best defensive midfielder in the history of the game. And I don't think it's pretty much debatable. And I don't think people have realized the caliber of player that we had in MLS for a couple of years. He's incredible. And still, yes, he was slow. Slower than what he was at his prime. But he was always, he knew where to be. He was always in the right position. And you saw it again on Red Bull's first goal, how Miami got, again, caught in a defensive transition. Everybody was caught off position. And when you see the replay, Julian Hall attacks wide. He has time to drink a coffee, wait for Rubalcaba to come in. Rubalcaba gets the ball, adjusts his body, and De Paul is not even in the picture. Yeah. Nobody has caught up to him. And this is the middle of the field. And Miami had this issue last game against Austin. Messi loses the ball close to a box after a corner kick and defensive transition. The midfield doesn't recover and the fullbacks doesn't recover and Austin scores.
Yeah.
Like Red Bull scores. So Miami has an issue at midfield. De Paul, it's not the ideal replacement for Busquets. They're completely different players.
Yeah, he's not a replacement at all. He's an attack. The ball is an attack dog.
Yes. So I truly believe that they need to, it's fixable, of course, and they're going to use the summer transfer window to fix it. I truly believe that the player that they need to target is Casemiro, like what the rumors are going on. So I think there's two things. One, obviously after, and I remember this vividly because I did the MLS Cup game, as soon as the game ended, during the celebration, Jorge Mas was saying, we just won MLS Cup right there. Now next year, we're going after the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So what happened? I think they made it, they panic a little bit and they didn't sign and they didn't did the thoughtful roster construction because one, the winter transfer window is always more complicated than the summer transfer window. And that's one of the reasons that MLS is switching the calendar next year, right? So they signed Berterame for $15 million. As of now, that's not working. So they signed Dane Sinclair. As of now, that hasn't been working, but the difference between what Rocco Rios was at the end of the year and what St. Clair has done, and we're talking about the MLS goalkeeper of the year last year, and a great goalkeeper, but he has had his errors and issues.
Yeah.
They signed Mikael, ex-Houston Dynamo. He was with Palmeiras, great center back. But I feel that he was very rushed because obviously CONCACAF Champions Cup starts very soon in the season, and you don't have a lot of time. And when you have Messi, I think you in the back of your mind is like, we're going to make it work.
Yeah.
And they brought Allende back. So they put all the eggs in the basket real quick and they rush to attack CONCACAF Champions Cup. And then you get eliminated real quick. And now you're in this limbo of there's a lot of season to go through until the summer break when you can kind of fix the team again. But what are you going to do? All your 3DP spots are filled right now. So are you going to sell Bertrand? Are you buying him out?
Exactly, yeah.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do with DePaul? I mean, DePaul's not going anywhere, right?
No. Unless it's his girlfriend's playing a concert.
Exactly. but obviously, you're not going to do anything with Messi. Exactly. So it's fixable, but they have a lot of work. Are they good enough to win MLS Cup again? Yes.
Without that, yeah.
But to make that quality jump to be a contender in the continent and in for example, if they go again to a Club World Cup or if they want to go next year and attack again CONCACAF Champions Cup, they need to fix because this team is not good enough for that.
Yeah, it's the loss against Nashville in Champions Cup was really, I mean, like, credit to Nashville, but very disappointing from a...
No, absolutely. It was crushing.
Yeah.
Crushing. And when you talk with people in the club, the players, the front office, and the PR people, they were crushed. They didn't expect that, especially because in the back of their minds, they destroyed Nashville in the playoffs last year.
All the time. But
like, oh, Nashville again? Oh, we got this.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a, like, the structure of like the project or the vision of the project is immediately shifted of like what it's a I'm not going to say an embarrassing loss, but like if they would have lost to a Liga MX team, there's a little bit of like, oh, okay, well, yeah, it's Cruz Azul or whatever. No,
I'm not going to say anything out of line because the people at the club will tell you it was a failure.
Sure.
They failed, period. And again, Jorge Mas, after winning MLS Cup, they said our objective is CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Yeah.
And they, by March, it's a failure already. Yeah. So, you know, it was a very difficult pill to swallow.
Yeah.
So, and you're seeing it right now. Like the mood is not the best. Messi's not happy. Like he left the game on Saturday. As soon as the whistle blew, he went like a beeline to the locker room.
Yeah.
No t-shirt exchange. I don't want to talk to anything. So clearly things are not working right now. But again, things are not working for what? Because at MLS, they're still a really good team. They're still a contender for MLS Cup. But the vibes and the goals for this year, they're already crushed.
Yeah.
Because they really want a CONCACAF.
But you've interviewed Lionel Messi several times already.
Yes.
And my favorite was obviously when you asked him a question about what his signing for next season. And, you know, he had a nice little moment of like, hey, enough, Michele. We were cool for the first 90 seconds, but what's all this about?
He was cool.
It was great. Yeah. You don't really get just to see Messi, usually, especially in post-match interviews. He doesn't almost show any emotion ever. But what have been your favorite moments? Has your life changed in any way after doing those interviews? Like, I don't know. I'm sure you get some message or comment from somebody you never thought you would ever would be in your comment section. Absolutely. And stuff like that. Yeah. What's that been like?
A lot of Argentinian people and media on my DMs.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to say something that, I mean, I'm very lucky to be living in this era that we're living, because we're watching the best player of all time at the sport that we love. Like, I grew up, I was a kid when Michael Jordan did what he did at an NBA. So I remember, and I love Michael Jordan, but I didn't like live it, you know?
Same, yeah.
With Messi, we're living it.
I mean, he crushed my Knicks a couple times, I never saw it in person.
Right, we're kids.
I've seen Messi destroy NYCFC. You're
too, exactly.
I can feel it's a little bit more real to me.
So for me, as a professional and doing what I do, interviewing Messi and getting those type of interviews is like one of the top pinnacles of your career. Last year, I got to interview him 3 times in a season, which is crazy. Yeah. One post-game, one before MLS Cup. And this is a pretty cool story I'm going to share. I don't know if it's a lot of people know. So before MLS Cup, the league wanted to do an interview with Messi, you know, to preview, a sit-down to preview. He doesn't do much of that.
Yeah.
And a few days before MLS Cup, like the club reached out to MLS and they said, hey, Leo wants to do an interview, 5 questions. We'll do it here at the club, etc. But one condition, with Michele.
Only Michele, yeah.
And I've never told anyone this. And that I know that because and even Messi told me that. And those moments are like, for me, it's been difficult my whole life because I'm an immigrant in this country, you know? And in a country like the US, I sometimes lose, and I'm pretty sure it happens to you and people that you know. Sometimes you fail to stop and smell the roses and think, oh, what we have achieved in a country that's not ours, right?
Right.
And I've always said I struggle a lot when I was at Univision with, how do you call that? Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, of course.
A lot. I've learned to deal with it. But I've always, in the back of my mind, it's like 1,000 people can do my job. Why am I the one having it? So I've been getting better at it. But anyways,
I wanted to know that.
So it's been pretty cool. Obviously, like, and I'm not rooting for Miami. People think that at MLS we are all rooting for Miami. We want Miami best interest. But we're talking about the best player of all time.
Yeah.
And when you get to interview him or interact with him, it's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie.
The clout that comes with it is cool. But also, yeah, it's just like one of the, as far as like human beings that are good at their craft, like this is like one of just the top tier people that are good at one particular thing. That is just an honor to talk to them. So no, I appreciate.
And Red Bulls are really good. I don't think we.
That's how, literally my next question.
Oh, okay,
Red Bulls. Yes. You know, we get a lot of stick because obviously Alexis and I are both NYCFC.
What? Really?
Season ticket holders, but we get especially from Red Bull fans, especially, which is fine. But you know, we try to be on this show. We try to be as objective as possible. If it's a Hudson River Derby, there's no objectivity there. But I'll just point this out because this was like, oh my God, this was like such a big deal on like Reddit and a bunch of other stuff. We had posted on social media a clip about Julian Hall and just like sort of giving us flowers after he got a brace, I think, in the first or second game of the season or something like that. We were just talking about So we were just saying like how like good he went. And I think we had mentioned it on the show, and I don't know if it was our producer, somebody said like that he was from New Jersey, like this kid from New Jersey. And he's not from New Jersey. He's actually from New York City. So when we posted...
Betrayal.
So when we posted it and the caption that said like this kid from New Jersey... The Rebel fans are like, this is the propaganda of these NYCFC fans. They never think that Rebel actually represents New York City as well.
Yeah.
And whatever. So apologies to anyone who was upset with the cabin. Send all your letters to the producer who told me that he was from New Jersey. I don't know. But that is this was a breakout game. I mean, Rebel had a really bad loss a couple days.
Yeah, 6-1 against...
Which is like you start thinking like, oh, is this really what Michael Bradley's team is?
Yeah.
But I think this performance against Inter Miami was stellar, and especially from Julian Hall and then Mehmedi as
well.
The midfield was. I mean, we were talking about it before we started recording, but yeah, please, you got to see it in person.
So an interesting thing is that we've always if you ask somebody that doesn't follow this Red Bull team, right? What's the Red Bull identity? For a long time, historically.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Red Bull, high press.
Yeah, yeah.
Just run. Mm-hmm. Don't control the ball. Just run, press, transition. This Red Bull team is different. They're high intensity. They press high, but they want the ball. And they're really good with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it all starts with that double pivot in the middle. I don't understand how this kid, Adri Mehmedi, he turned 17 because I spoke to him after the game. He turned 17 last Monday.
Okay.
So he's basically a 16-year-old.
Right.
And Ronald Doncor, 21 years old. With the ball at his feet, it reminds me to a young Nagby, dribbling through pressure. You cannot take the ball out of them. And that's something that Michael Bradley, who played the position, mm-hmm. one of the best U.S. soccer players of all time, that he works a lot with Mehmedi and Doncor. And that's what the things that he said. I tell their teammates, give them the ball. It doesn't matter if they have four guys around it. They're not going to lose the ball. They're that good. And I think, and I understand that you have the duo of Berhalter's Cubas in Vancouver. And you have other duos like Roldan or Obed Vargas last year in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But this duo of Doncor and Mehmedi, 17 and 21, it's not the best in MLS right now. It's very, very close to a top. And then you have Michael Bradley, who has the stones to game one, give Julian Hall the freedom and put him as his starting number 9 ahead of Choupo-Moting.
Yeah.
Who scored 20 goals last year in all competitions, 20, and he's a DP. So you have a DP sitting in the bench and Bradley's like, I don't care. I'm going to put the 17-year-old.
Right.
And he has 5 goals already
mm-hmm.
and 3 assists, I think he had, or 4 assists. This, I love, I know you guys are New York City and I love New York City too. I think Pascal Janssen is an incredible coach, but I really like watching this Red Bull New York team play, especially because the young talent, it's, in my opinion, the best in the league.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll probably go into like RSL, when I also think of like very young talent,
yes.
That's another team that stands out. But yeah, it's not fun. I don't want Rebel to do well. But as the objective sports person, I do think, you know, and I have plenty of friends that are Rebel fans and diehard, and you know, the shout out Choopy, the dude with the Viking helmet that's in the stands. He's Dominican, another Dominican. Yeah. When I find other Dominicans in the sport, I'm like, this is great that we exist here because there aren't many of us, right? But I know so many Rebel fans that's so incredibly disheartened by the team. Even the MLS Cup run was exciting, and even for them, they were like, we didn't expect this. We didn't think this would happen. But for several years, and we've seen the banners in the stands and fans being frustrated or sell the team and finding just a different vision for the team. And Michael Bradley seemingly is like that, a little bit of that, not necessarily antidote, but at least like somebody willing to take some risk and make some real changes.
They were terrible last year. Terrible.
Yes.
The last time they played Miami, I did that game last year. Mm-hmm. It was one of the last games of Sandor Schwartz. Miami beat them 5-1 here at Sports Illustrated Stadium, mm-hmm. and they looked terrible.
Right. Right.
So nobody was, I don't think anybody was expecting this. I've heard a lot of good things with Bradley. And I mean, he took the Red Bulls team too last year.
That's right. And they won. Yeah.
And they won the MLS Next Pro. So that's, he knew a lot of the young players. And we haven't mentioned Dos Santos, the left back, 17 years old. The right back, Marshall Rudy, 21. One of their center backs, Justin Che, 22. Rubalcaba is like the old guy. He's 24.
Yeah, yeah.
Cowell is 24 or 25. If you take out Forsberg and Horvath, the rest of the starting 11, their average age, it's 21.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 21. And they're going to have all the ups and downs. They lost to Montreal with Wiki Carmona scoring the two goals. Yeah, yeah. And they lost 6-1. But I was talking to Michael Bradley. It's like, hey, how do you deal with this during the season? Because you're dealing with emotional young players,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it can go through a lot. It's a lot of pressure.
My message is like, guys, it's part of life. It's part of life. This is going to happen. It's like when you go to your normal job and you have a bad day. Next day is another opportunity. You know, 6-1, the next day, didn't happen, let's go.
It does highlight that that philosophy and that message can be delivered in Major League Soccer. Yes. But if you're Wilfred Nazi at Celtic, you can't be, you're like, it's part of life. You can't do that.
No.
Because you're done. You're gone. No. You're gone the next day.
Exactly.
You're like, no, this is this is a nightmare. You cannot allow that to exist. But we can get into a whole conversation. We've had these conversations plenty of times, even about Wilfred Nazi. But there is something like this, a team like this, with so many young players, can only, in my opinion, only exist in Major League Soccer. Like these kind of risks, these kinds of taking chances. Maybe only is a stretch, but I do think there's a little bit of, you can experiment a little bit more and find that talent absolutely. Rather than other leagues.
Well, I know we're going to get this, but that's one of the main issues with Italian soccer right now.
Right.
But you see it in Barcelona. Barcelona plays a lot of kids.
Sure, sure.
A lot of kids.
Usually not at the same time.
Not right? at the same Not time, the same but you have two or three in the...
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Red Bulls, it's incredible.
The baby bulls, as they
baby
say.
Baby bulls, los toritos.
All right. We watched every MLS team this season, and we've got our official ruling. Some teams have earned everything they got, and some teams owe their fans, I think, a few apologies. So we're naming them all right now. Biggest surprise this season, Michele.
Real Salt Lake.
Okay, you've never heard that sound after the words RSL.
And I'll fight you. You speak badly about Utah and Salt Lake City. Love that place. I'll fight you all.
Okay, why are RSL your biggest surprise this season?
Well, we're talking about Red Bulls, right? Salt Lake City is doing something similar with the kids. Xavier Gozo. Do you know the story about his name?
I don't know.
Xavier Didier Gozo.
We got a Didier Gozo.
You know why?
I'm assuming because the drug buff.
Yeah.
Okay.
His father is from...
Ivory Coast? Or?
Ivory Coast.
Okay, okay.
His father from Ivory Coast and his idol, his favorite player is Didier Drogba. So he named his kid Xavier Didier Gozo because of Drogba.
I love it.
The more you know.
Okay, that's why we bring you
I
on.
I love Gozo.
Okay.
I love Gozo. I love what Pablo Mastroeni is doing. I spoke with Pablo. I had Salt Lake City back-to-back at the beginning of the season, week two and week three. And at that time, they were missing a few players for injuries and for visa issues. And they had to play the kids. They had a couple kids playing also Gozo. And I was speaking with Pablo. And I love Pablo. He's one of the best coaches in MLS. He's one of those coaches that clicks with the players. And you see it in the silence, the weight, the passion. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a very passionate guy. And he's Latino too. So
yeah, it's, yeah. The connection is great. The iconic USMNT photo with the one laying down.
Yeah.
Landon has the water fountain one and he has the other classic one.
Pablo, he's a great guy. He's always been supportive of our work and my work. And he's always great when you talk to him. And I remember week two prepping for the game, I spoke to him and he said, you're going to see, you have on the West, you have the top tier, right? On paper, Vancouver, LAFC, San Diego, et cetera. And he said, we're right there. We're like right there, right behind them. I was like, what are you talking about? Every year you're fighting to get into a plane.
Right, right.
And like, we are right there. Gilavogi.
Okay.
Under DP.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Legit. He told me, watch this guy. He's probably going to be in the runner for newcomer of the year. He's a great, great signing. They've been doing a great job on the front office to sign these type of players like Gilavogi and to surround a team with the youngster that they have. So they have a really good mix about youngsters and veterans like Justin Glad, for example.
Of course. Who's been there forever.
Forever. Right? Forever. And you have all these kids. Gozo Hersekani. He's another very...
He's
been fantastic. Yeah. So, but Golavogi, Eneli, now he's back from injury. The guy they brought from Sweden, I think from Sweden or from Denmark, I'm blanking right now, on midfield. He's really good, but he couldn't play until like week four because he was dealing with like visa things and of course we haven't even mentioned Diego Luna.
Yeah, I know because he was injured.
He's back. This team is fun. They're really fun as the Red Bulls are, but I didn't know they were gonna be this good. They're right there behind LAFC in Vancouver on the West, Pablo said. It's a young season. It's been 6 games for them because they had to reschedule the game against Seattle this week because they're putting they're doing like still working like on the grass on Seattle.
Okay, okay.
So, but out of 6 games, they've won 4.
Yeah.
And they play Seattle at Salt Lake City. I had that game and they destroy Seattle on week 2.
Sure.
And I really like, I think they're, in my opinion, the biggest surprise.
Okay. Yeah. They've been entertaining to watch. And it's the last, I don't know, 2-3 years, there's been a new joy because they had a stretch where RSL were just really, really not
mid.
Not,
they were mid.
Yeah, yeah, they were mid. And
it's like, we already know what this team is. They're going to be in the plane. They're
And we had Chris Winger on a couple last year sometime, last summer, and he won the MLS Cup with RSL. And he had and hearing the stories about what RSL was sort of like back then was awesome.
So there was a vibe with Kyle Beckerman.
Yeah, 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 dude. It's one of the classic teams. So my biggest surprise this season, I think, probably for a lot of people, given that they were the worst defensive team last season, the San Jose Earthquakes. They have turned things around in a way that even I didn't think Bruce Arena could necessarily figure this out.
He didn't.
He didn't. You don't give him credit for this?
No. Oh. He wasn't expecting this.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because I spoke to him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I wasn't expecting this.
That's great from Bruce. He's like, don't even give me all the credit. I don't exactly know what's going on either.
But he said, like, and to his credit, he said, I don't think we're as good as we've been, but I think obviously we're going to be much better than we were last year.
Yeah.
And we got to remember that they started last year really well. They crashed and burned, but they started really well. But they lost Joseph, they lost Chicho, and they lost Espinosa.
Yeah.
I mean, and don't get me started.
And it was an embarrassing way
they lost Espinosa.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how people didn't get fired over that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But he said, I wasn't expecting this. And to his credit, he said, and we asked, he's like, okay, how do you assess? Like, what's the point, right? And he said, I think we're going to know, and you guys are going to know what we are after. He said, give us like 15 games. And we and you guys are going to know what we truly are like in 15 games. I mean, if it's Bruce Arena says it, you to you, bro. You're the GOAT. So
he does seemingly find, I always find Bruce to be a like ragtag, like fine, like he can take like the
the players that were discarded from other teams and be like, okay, no, I know a place. I know something that could work for you.
And even, that's experience like, and knowing the league.
Dave Romney scoring a goal. I mean, no disrespect to Dave Romney, but it's just like, you don't necessarily, he's not even, even on set pieces, you're not necessarily expecting much out of him. But Preston Judd, like and they're scoring goals where they're like getting in positions and making teams just like look lost against them. I mean, the last game looked exactly like that. Well, it's just a like I said, like Bruce always, I always go back to that the quote of and I forget the exact context. I think it might have been with the national team. It might have been with the Revs. I don't remember. But he was just like, if you know soccer is just a game. Your 11 guys against my 11 guys. If my 11 guys can beat your 11 guys, then I was like, okay, I don't even. do you need your coaching badges for that? So, but he just finds a way where he's clearly a just good relationship with players seem to very much trust him.
Yes,
and they believe where they know where they stand with Bruce Arena, and I think that motivates the players in a really good
but
way.
But that's human nature. Yeah, even if you're a 16, 17 years old like Gozo or the kids at New York, or you're at Romney, 34, 35 years old, for a player, if there's nothing better than your coach trusting you.
Yeah.
And knowing that you are in a safe space to put it in a kind of like a human nature, and you're not like, you feel like if you make a mistake, you're going to get scolded or you're going to get be taken out or you're going to ride the bench on the next one. And Bruce is like, also like, I mean, he's the best of all time in US soccer, right? Mm-hmm. That's not an argument. There's not a debate.
Yeah.
At least right? Yeah, yeah. And with the national team, et cetera. And he's at a point that, it's like, I don't give an F anymore. Like, I think he's always been like that. But now it's like he's on the last steps, maybe of his career. So it's like, I think he's just like, I'm just going to do my thing. And I don't care because I know it works. And last year, I remember when they signed Joseph, not a lot of people wanted Joseph, you know? Even though he scored some goals with Montreal the year before, he was coming from, you know, the two brutal injuries and the way he exited Atlanta, fighting with the front office and with Gonzo Pineda, etc. And he said, no, I'm going to bring Joseph. I said, okay, he's going to be an insurance for Chicho Arango. No, he's going to play. I'm going to play both. He's like, what? No. I'm going to do my thing and you're going to see. And they started very well.
And they did, yeah.
They did. And then the thing, you know, it's a long season, and when you have players also that they don't want to be there, and they're already like, you know, there's a lot of that happens during a long season behind the scenes. But he's gonna do Bruce things, and sometimes, I mean, they always work.
Yeah,
and they're working.
it says a lot about a manager that's been in MLS so long that, you know, sometimes the league can evolve around you and you're like, oh, you sort of lost. And Bruce always seems to adapt and find a way. So you got to give some credit to that. All right, let's move on to biggest disappointments. I'll go first. Biggest disappointment for me, and it was a difficult to pick because there were a few. But CF Montreal is, and they just fired their head coach,
Donadel.
But it's just been years and years. How long can this go? I won't ever forget. And I think it was 2019 or 2018. We went to Montreal for a playoff game against Toronto. So Drogba was still there. Nacho Piatti was still there. And we this is 3 years into the pocket. We didn't exactly know. We got tickets to the game. Not realizing that it wasn't at Stade Saputo. It was at the Olympic Stadium. Mm-hmm. So we literally bring the biggest coats. And we're getting there. We are sweating. I don't believe we're in this indoor stadium where the Montreal Expos used to play.
Yeah.
But the passion and love for that team was just so evident there, especially with, you know, not Drogba had his time there, but Nacho Piatti is complete. I'm one of my favorite players ever in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, and a great guy.
Great guy. Yeah, yeah. You worked with him for a long time. But they're just in this like sort of Tailspin, where they're not spending any money. What was this, Carter? We have the stat. Do we have it on screen?
What Tom
put on I think it was on Blue Sky. Yeah. It said Montreal has not spent a single real dollar on a transfer fee to sign a designated player since club legend Nacho Piatti in 2014. George Mihailovic was an allocation money. Victor Wanyama was a free transfer. Ivan Jaime alone. What results can ownership reasonably expect? You see the pressure that other teams and other franchises put on like the rest of the league to obviously bring in big players. And Montreal was just like, oh, well, I mean, I don't want to make any assumptions, but it seemingly feels like they don't care about the product that they're putting out on the field.
If you had to criticize that, yes. Yeah. You can criticize that ownership is not as involved as it should be. Mm-hmm. And the numbers are right there.
Right.
Right now, who's the Vrioni? Is there only DP on the roster? Mm-hmm. And that was like, I think it was like a trade with New England or something, or allocation money. Mm-hmm. So again, to Tom's point, 2014, right. That's 12 years ago. And Saputo, they own Bologna.
Yeah.
Right. And Bologna is a team that it was in Champions League, I think a couple
years ago. Like Europa, they're always in the...
Yeah, they're in the Europa League. So they're a team that it's always like fighting mid-table and going to European Cup. So they invest good money in Bologna. It's like a little bit more in Montreal. I mean, I remember speaking with Caden Clark 2 years ago when Montreal got into a playing game against Atlanta.
Yeah.
Two years ago, that they then Atlanta wins in PKs, mm-hmm. and then Atlanta goes and Miami the first messy playoffs. Mm-hmm. And Caden Clark was saying, because Caden Clark, you know, has been traded a couple times and he got to Montreal, like not knowing, like, oh, what's happening here? And he said, what you're saying, like, it's a great, great spot because they don't have anything else but hockey and soccer.
Yeah.
That's it. It's the Canadiens. is it Montreal?
Montreal Canadiens. Yeah.
And the soccer club.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fans really love the soccer there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going through this with my club team Lazio and my national team Italy. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that you can be or feel as a fan is apathy. Because you can go through all the spectrum of happiness to mad and hate your club. But as a fan or as an owner, I prefer that you hate me. But, you know, I feel the emotion.
There's something there, yeah.
When you as a fan or you as a club make your customer and your fans feel apathy, you're done. You're done. You're absolutely done.
Yeah.
And because fans are...
You hear that, Jets fans?
Don't, dude, I'm down bad. Dolphins, Lazio, Italy.
Brother.
Thank God for the Florida Panthers.
Okay.
Because the last few years have been rough, bro.
Right.
Rough. So, and that's how I feel right now, for example, with Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't care. You've crushed me so much that you don't. I'm not gonna care for you anymore until you show me something.
Italy better. Hurts more.
It's like a marriage or a love. The relationship between fan and club. It's a love relationship.
Yeah.
And again, you can be mad all you want, but you still have the feeling, and because it shows that you care. When you get to a point of apathy.
Yeah.
You lost it.
It also feels, even for players that get traded to Montreal, there's a little bit of like, oh, I get to go to this cool city and this club.
It's such a club. It's a great city.
It's a great city. Oh, and it's just like, no, they just don't see. Like, it feels like this, like, wasteland for Major League Soccer. Montreal feel like a financial tool for the other teams to be like, okay, I need to move some gam and I need to get, just put it in Montreal. We'll figure it out later. That shouldn't be any club. They should care a little bit more deeply than that. But then the conversation of like a single entity and like that some clubs could maybe just like not take it as seriously and they still kind of benefit there because there is no tremendous risk. But there has to be. I mean, this kind of there was a
a statement. I saw Joseph Lowry from Total Soccer Show and Backheeled. He had reposted it. Mm-hmm. The statement that Montreal made a year ago, saying like, "Hey guys, we are turning things around," and it's just like you haven't. You know what I mean? And yet the simple solution could be just throw money at the problem. But
that's not a solution always.
It's not a solution always, but it's a start, right? Like you can gain a little bit.
You can start changing the narrative.
Yeah. And they just have not. And it's a shame because like, I mean, they seem to be excited about the rebrand and all this other stuff.
And I'm going to tie this to my biggest disappointment, right? Yeah. Which is Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Atlanta spends money and they keep spending. But at least that decision to spend money and keep spending money tells you that they're trying. The biggest problem or the sensation that Montreal is giving right now is sadly that they're not even trying.
Right.
Again, you don't fix anything with money, but at least it gives the impression that you're trying to fix a problem.
Sure.
So that's where you're having. And it sucks because it's bad for the league. It's bad for the league, period.
Yeah.
You want all your teams to be extremely competitive. And again, going back to I'm going to go back to Miami because people like to like talk, you know what, about, oh, they're so cocky. They're so, no, or the Dodgers in baseball, right? I want my owners to be like the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I don't want my owners to be like the Marlins. They're like, no, Dodgers are bad for the game. Inter Miami's bad for the game. No. They're great for the game.
Yeah.
Because they win it for the people up top to push people up. Mm-hmm. Let's go here. No, I don't want the people at the bottom to drown the people that are trying.
You might as well be Brad Sims in that chair, just like we had 2 weeks ago. Brad said the same. Brad said the same exact thing. And talking from a front office perspective, he's like, he said the words. We should have MLS should have some super teams where
because super teams are good
because that drives the interest into the league. Obviously, he was talking about it from a broadcast revenue perspective. But look. There, we don't necessarily have, I don't think we have multiple Montreals right now.
No.
This is just, it's unacceptable. I mean, that's just the reality. You see a statistic like that and like the fact that they haven't spent any money on like a transfer fee and all that shows me that they have zero ambition and that they don't see any real benefit to spending that kind of money. Maybe the thought is like, oh, we spend it. The ticket sales are going to be the same. It's not going to be a big deal. And that shows a disconnect with the fan base.
And again, we're not saying that's what's happening. That's the impression.
Yeah, we can all we speculate.
Actions speak louder than words.
100%. Right. 100%. Yeah. So. Anything else on Atlanta? I mean, that was your biggest disappointment. But this kind of it's just the complete opposite of Montreal. Yeah. I don't know.
Atlanta's the biggest spender and they have the same issues as last year. Biggest disappointment because, again, I didn't have Atlanta as a super successful team this year. I think in my predictions, I have them like fighting for the plane, like best case scenario. But with the return of Tata Martino and making that connection again with Miguel Almirón, you know, another year for another opportunity for Latelaz. They signed some good players like Galarza, the Paraguayan that they brought on midfield. He's really good, really, really good. But they still have the same problems. The center backs are an issue. The defense are an issue. The transitions are an issue. And we thought that Tata was going to fix it. Maybe he will fix it. But as of now, it has looked worse than I thought it was going to be.
It's wild. Yeah. I mean, even with Ronnie Dyla there, the problem, I don't know if it's just simply the players. It doesn't seem like it's simply just the coaching. It's hard to exact. Both coaches kind of seemingly have the same exact problems. But Atlanta's another one where, they got into the league on an incredible high, lots of success. Yeah. And we spent a lot. We've done so many, stand-up shows and live shows out in Atlanta. The audiences and then just the fan base is just like has a huge fervor. And then you just a real dip of like, what? Yeah. How could it's weird because when I was talking to Brad Sims and talking about the philosophy of the players that they choose to sign, there is I wouldn't know until I speak to more people, but it was interesting given that he is not the sporting director or GM, he was very thoughtful in even talking about how they even scout in thinking about, one of the things that stuck out to me was just like, He's like, I'm not here to convince you to come to New York City to go play. Like, there's just a little bit of like, I need to sense that you really actually want to be here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, NYCFC has had a couple duds here and there, but for the most part, the effort is always there. The heart is always there. The sort of median competitiveness or interest to like get to the playoffs and get to and chase MLS Cup is always kind of there. And I feel somewhat, I don't know, lucky in this, as far as my New York fandom, which hasn't really included that for most of my life. But the fact that they are, the consistency is there. And even without signing these big, they haven't spent a ton of money on these big name players. We don't have the Villa, Pirlo, Lampard kind of like, they didn't stick to that philosophy at all. And there's been a lot of success. And that's, it's something, you know, you would think other clubs would kind of follow or even follow the get bringing in big stars kind of a thing. And they don't, everybody has kind of their own identity, but it's just sad to see some of them just like really, really fall off. Cause it shouldn't be, like you said, they shouldn't be apathy, whether it comes from the fan base or even from the front office themselves.
And sometimes you get teams that they just seems to get fooled by players that play abroad. Or in Europe.
Of course.
And I'm going to take the
bamboozled.
Bamboozled.
Yeah.
By sometimes, you know, agents don't have their your best faith.
Yeah, yeah.
They just want to like, you know. And I'm going to put Atlanta right here. I have nothing against Emmanuel Latalath. I think he's a great guy. He's a really good striker. But it hasn't worked well as of now. Mm-hmm. They spend $22 million for him. And what I sometimes wonder... And again, I'm not even close to understand or to be able to do that job. But we've seen that the MLS level right now is really good. And you have players here in MLS that have shown their value. So, and I know it's not easy. It's not like you're going to a supermarket and just pick up a pineapple, whatever.
Right, right.
But if I'm Atlanta, instead of going to Middlesbrough, and spend $22 million for a striker that honestly we don't know if it's gonna work out. Dude, just go to Dallas and offer Dallas your stadium for Peter Musa.
Right, right.
And put Peter Musa in Atlanta and you know
because you
know he's gonna score 25 goals.
and now MLS there's a lot it's easier for those intra.
I always remember LAFC 2022 when they won, right? They did a total overhaul. Bradley left.
Yeah.
You know, you still have Carlos Vela because you still have to have the star, right? And that players that can the game changer, right? Mm. But what were their signings? Maxime Crepeau, Kellyn Acosta, Ryan Hollingshead. They surrounded the three stars that they have with MLS proven players. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They won.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm Ryan Hollingshead is another. Huge fan of Brian. We interviewed him when he was at FC Dallas.
Best mustache in the game.
Best mustache. Yeah. A guy who got handsomer from his FC Dallas to LA.
Ryan, what are you doing? Hey, hey, I'm turning 42 in September. Give that. Look at this, bro.
Objectively handsomer. I don't know what.
look at here, bro. Give me the tips.
Everything was working great. And he scored a whole bunch of goals as a fullback. He's fantastic. So, all right. We got 9 weeks till the World Cup is on our shores. I'm a little bit nervous. Obviously, the U.S. men's national team is playing. We are hosting. We got Michele Giannone here, who covers the U.S. men's national team and covered them for a long time. But I'm a little bit fearful. And we talk about our fears going into this World Cup because these friendlies are not giving me the most confidence. So I'll start, Michele. My biggest fear right now, my first one, getting grouped. If we do not get out of this group in a World Cup with 48 teams, a lot of rounds, we were playing against Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey. If we get grouped out of this, I mean, it will, the embarrassment will be pretty, you know, just like, I mean, we will feel it. I mean, it would just be... There's something to. I mean, what was the 98 World Cup was also the one we got grouped and people still talk about that quite a bit. But this
I given the quality of players, and I'm bought into all the propaganda of like this golden generation, blah blah blah. We cannot get grouped. So that's my first one.
I mean, I don't think we're gonna get grouped, but I don't think we're winning the group.
Interesting. Okay. And who do you think is winning the group?
Turkey.
Okay. And
I think Turkey is way better than people think. And I think Paraguay is way better than people think. The issue with Paraguay is that the last memory that U.S. soccer fans have from Paraguay is from last year, right, with the U.S. destroy them. I think that game is, what is the, have you ever watched, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah, yeah.
The episode of Science is a Liar, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. The empirical data is wrong. Yeah.
So I think that game was a big lie of what both teams are going to be doing the World Cup.
Interesting. Yeah, it could be like this weird like red herring of you know, getting our sort of like hopes so, up. Yeah, cuz I mean,
for me it will not be a shock. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think it will be a shock if the US advances as one of the best thirds.
Which
will be a disappointment. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think they're winning the group. I think Turkey is the best team in that group. Because it's a team that people don't know well, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And on paper, you see this name like Yildiz, Arda Güler, but it goes beyond of that. And they were in the playoffs. And by default, fans think that because a team went to a playoffs, they're like a mid team or something.
Right.
No. Right. Turkey is really good. Europe is really hard to qualify. If not, ask the guys in blue that they don't even deserve for me to keep naming them. I think Turkey's really good. I think Paraguay has one of the best coaches in CONMEBOL, and they're going to be ready for the World Cup. And I'm fearful that they're going to be really tough for the U.S.
Yeah, my fear is I would agree. I don't think we're going to win the group. And these friendlies, it's not even just the friendlies. The results I can kind of live with.
The vibes.
You know, there's a little bit of Pochettino talking out of both sides of his mouth.
I hate with passion what he said about the top 100 players.
Yeah.
It bothered me so much.
It's like, we don't need to hear that right now.
If you believe it, fine. Maybe it's true. Maybe. I think Christian Pulisic is a top 100 player. I think Gerard Robinson is a top 100 player, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think he's been the best left back in Premier League for a long time. But if you think so, and if you believe that, why do you have to say it?
Right.
Why? To what? To send a message to your team? The vibes are bad, bro. Like, don't make it
Do you do
worse.
That? Is the locker room, the halftime talk, being like, hey, you guys are not the top 100.
You suck. You guys suck.
You might be 103. You might be 104.
Yeah, it's like, Weston, I think you're like 111. So you've been courting with Juve. You're like 102.
I'm not here to disrespect anybody.
Listen, he didn't say anything most of what he said is true. But on the Belgium and Portugal side, they're filled with best players in the world. But I don't think you're doing a service to your team in saying that. But I'm going to go back to my belief, which is that these two games was a reminder that talent-wise, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've been hearing, when I started covering the USMNT, was the after they didn't qualify for Russia.
Yeah.
So I was there through the transition year with Sarah Ken, who I remember the game against a friendly against Italy, I guess, that year, or in France or something. Mm-hmm. He gave Weston McKennie his first start, mm-hmm, with the USMNT. Weston McKennie, he was playing at Schalke. He was like 20, 21? I don't remember. 18, 19, whatever. So it was this new transition, right? And then Berhalter takes the team January 2019. That's when, and since that, I started covering the team, the first January camp. And you had all these kids, Pulisic, McKennie, Adams, with 20, 21, 22 years old. And they immediately got labeled by the golden generation, because they all play in Europe, right? And they were going. And I remember talking with the great Tony Meola. Best guy, mm-hmm, the best. When these kids were going, I think that the interview was that around 2019, 2020. And he told me something that I go back consistently. He said, because we're talking about already towards the projection to 2026, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where all these players, like they're right now, they're at their prime. So they're getting to the home World Cup in their prime. Mm-hmm. 28, 29, 30 playing in Europe, you know, like best level of US soccer ever. And he said, I'm going to stop you right there. They have won nothing. They have not shown anything. So this golden generation label is going to be a problem. It's going to be an issue because of the first sign of failure or of the first sign of not reaching that level is going to be too loud, a lot of noise. And he said something else, which is I think is most important. He said, if we get to 2026 with Christian Pulisic not being our best player, then we will be in a good position.
Yeah, and he's not our best player.
He's our best player.
You think so?
Christian Pulisic.
Right now?
He's our best. Come on. Okay. He's going through a slump, but he's our best player. Okay. Like, he's our best player. But his point is that Pulisic is going to get to this World Cup. I think he's 27, 20, 28 or something on his prime. Mm-hmm. So, but you also need like the new generation, right? So what Gio Reyna could have been. So his point was like, if we get to 2026 with like Gio Reyna being this baller in Europe at 23 years old, supporting McKenny, then we're going to be great. That didn't happen, sadly. Right. So I think that this team didn't develop as we hope so. I think we're still going to be competitive. I don't think this is the golden generation of soccer players because, again, we have a lot of players playing in Europe, but talent-wise, we're not there with Portugal, with Belgium, and we're still haven't reached the next level, which is Germany, Spain, England, France, Brazil,
etc. What I do think 2018 did was I think it raised the level of talent. I think with especially those players that you mentioned,
yes.
Right? Like the Pulisic, McKenny, Timothy Weah. There's like it raised the talent to be able to play with other talented players.
Yes,
but the players themselves are not the best players on their own teams,
yes.
Right? So it's like now it's not weird for an American to be on a solid team. You see Brendan Aaronson at Leeds, and he's like he has a couple of really like flashes of brilliance, but those Pulisic needs to be playing with really really good players so that he also looks very good, and we do not have 10 other players that also from those respective countries that are similar to the quality. So it's a matter of like being better than the sum of our parts. And the performances recently have not shown that.
But the soccer nowadays is also like, it's part of like the globalization of everything. Like now it's easier for the players to go to Europe.
Yeah.
Don't you think that Tab Ramos, Claudio Reyna, Alexi Lalas, Marcelo Balboa had the talent to play in Europe? They did.
Yeah, yeah.
But the rules, for example, in Italy, at that time, only 3 foreigners could be on your team.
Right.
Like, for example, and then the Bosman law came in, et cetera, and things changed. Mm-hmm. But the players didn't have it as easy to get to Europe. So now, everyone plays in Europe, it doesn't mean the same.
Yeah.
If we had like 10 guys playing in Europe in the 90s, oh boy, we're winning the World Cup for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, next, your fear. You have what's yours?
Yeah, kind of the same. If we don't win the first game against Paraguay, mm-hmm. I think it could like snowball, and like the vibes are not great right now, and I think that will be like a huge blow.
Yeah, I mean,
and the snowball and just it's gonna be then the second game you're playing like with the fear like if we don't win this like we're gonna get group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that snowball can be dangerous.
I don't remember. Did we win in 22? Did we win our first game or did we lose? I don't remember.
The first game in
2022.
Tie with Wales.
Tie with Wales. Okay. Yeah. That's right.
We beat Iran.
Yeah.
And with the Pulisic, the scoring with his
the
private
penis,
parts.
The penis hit. Yeah.
And what was the last game I think we tied?
Wasn't it a loss? No, the last game was Iran.
Last game was Iran?
Yeah. And that was a win. Oh, and then the England was 0-0. Okay, okay, okay. So,
England was in our group, of course. Yeah, it was tie, win.
Got it.
Okay. Tie, win, yes.
So, again, since the first game is against Paraguay and we won, and that's my recency bias is like, well, that's right, 3 points right there, right? But I don't think necessarily that would be the case. All right. Now, my next fear, and it's a much bigger subject, but I do think the current president, the political situation, a war with Iran, all this other stuff, I think it's deeply going to affect the not just the popularity of the sport, but the interest in the World Cup. I think the drama around I hate to just simply call it drama because it feels like it's a little trivializing, but the soccer is the less important thing here, but we all know that, I mean, the World Cups are an easy opportunity to get that like nationalistic pride about your country and all this other stuff. And it's just like, it's rah-rah, whatever. And it's hard to be rah-rah U.S. when U.S. involved in so many awful things around the world. So it's FIFA, I think, there's a complicity there with the Peace Prize and it's feeling like it's a joke. I mean, you're laughing in our faces, but I think when it goes to, this is why, for me, at least, this is how I compartmentalize, and I speak to a lot of people who work in the sport as well, and fans, we all have to sort of do this. It's like, for me, it's like, I know how important it is for these players to get this opportunity. This is literally, they've been dreaming about this since they're kids. Like, who gives a shit who the president is? Like, they've been doing this. Yeah. They've been dreaming about this for so long.
Yeah.
So I think about it in that sense of like the players that have worked so hard to get to that moment, the kids that get an opportunity to go to a World Cup game and how meaningful all that stuff is. But ultimately, I'm worried that the U.S. men's national team won't really get to be like super excited about the nationalistic part as much as they're going to be villainized by other countries. Like, those stories are going to be that. I mean, maybe it won't be on like our American broadcast, but on other broadcasts, teams are going to want to beat the U.S.
Yes.
And they're going to play really, really hard against us. And they have that motivation that it's a shame. I wish they weren't motivated in that way. But that is one of my fears, that I hope that the sport in itself is not so deeply negatively affected over this like nonsense going on outside of it.
The only silver lining in my opinion is that because I covered and I was in Russia and Qatar, two places that are not very popular, especially Russia right now. Once the tournament starts, a lot of those things evaporate.
Got it.
And Americans and you saw it on the Olympics with the hockey teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The flag unites a lot of people. So once the USMNT game starts, at least for the first game, I think all of that is going to be evaporated. But again, going back to my original point, if you don't win that first game...
Yeah, it's going
to... Now we're back. Okay,
the noise,
now,
yeah.
The noise comes back and bigger and then ever, and everything gets... it's a conglomeration of bad things and bad vibes. And I was talking with a couple of friends this weekend and people at the stadium. Like, they were asking me, like, hey, what do you think about the tickets? Hey, can you help us with, like, tickets and stuff? It's like, and they were like, we've been waiting our whole lives to go to a World Cup. And it's right now, it's here. It's here in my city, my backyard. And I can't afford it.
Yeah.
And it frustrates me a lot. Because for me, as a fan, as a player, or as a journalist, you know, if you work in soccer, the World Cup is the biggest, right? Even if you're, again, a fan, as a journalist, covering a World Cup is...
Of course,
the biggest. And for example, Russia and Qatar, all transportation was free.
Yeah. Yeah. That is not here, buddy.
How is it possible that here in the US we don't have that?
Yeah.
And I know it's not the local governments. I know it's all FIFA and et cetera. But it's part of like, oh man, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're like punching, like, oh, I recover. Then another blow. You know, it's like, dude, I want to like, in you guys went to Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the train to get to a stadium normally is $20. For the World Cup, it's going to be raised to 80. Yeah. To 80. Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's like, it's blow after blow. But again, because I've been there, once the games and the tournament starts, I think a lot of those things are evaporated. Of course, if your team doesn't do well, then after those 90 minutes, you're going to go back to feeling all the bad things.
But the thing that sucks is that if, say, miraculously, some way, we win the World Cup, you know Cash Patel is going to be drinking in the locker room with these guys, bro. That's the frustrating. He's not going to be there when we're losing, right? He's not going to uplift.
I agree with you. What do you want me to say?
That's the frustrating part. It's like,
well, of course it's frustrating. It's infuriating.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. And I think, I mean, we already talked about this. I mean, I'm an immigrant in this country. Mm-hmm. And every day it feels like I live in a, it's in a, I don't know what we're living through.
It's like you're looking over your shoulder. It's a nightmare. It's just like, it's the same thing. I've mentioned this on the, we've had, you know, Councilman Francisco Moya, who also does a lot of work in Queens. And I literally told him the same thing. I'm like, my mom has got her American citizenship, but she does not speak English. That she's still like, that's still something to be worried about. Yeah. And even just the concept of like ISAG matches and all, it's just like, so come on. Like, this isn't, we're talking about the trade should be free. And now we're talking about this other stuff. So look, I think it's a sad reality. I mean, and it's not just to do with soccer.
It's everything.
It's everything in life. But the World Cup is such a unifying, it's like the one thing for humanity to be like, okay, let's all shake hands and let's all get on board with this one thing. And that is being kind of taken away from us a little bit. All right. So the last, did you mention another fear? I know we're going into detail about our fear. This is basically, we're talking to
this is therapy.
So I'm sure it's therapeutic for a lot of people listening as well. Your last thing. But I think we kind of talk about it, but
I have a fear that if the national team doesn't do well or doesn't do as well as people think, we're going to lose a lot of people.
Okay.
A lot of people that we kind of like bring to soccer. Cause again, when we see the Olympics and hockey's expected to win. Right?
Yeah.
And anything else, it will be a failure. In baseball, they're expected to win. In basketball, the US has the best leagues in the world. In soccer, people that are not soccer fans, they watch the soccer team and the soccer players, and they said they're losers. They're not, obviously, but they're like, I mean, we're the USA. Why are they not the best in the world without not understanding Europe is and the history of the world? So the World Cup is that chance of grabbing those people and say, hey, this is what soccer is and could be in this country. And we were expecting, again, from 2022, making the jump to 2026 and be at contenders. I don't think we are. Mm-hmm. I don't think, and I think actually we're like at the same level that we were in 2022. So how are you going to convince those people that have apathy for soccer in this country that, oh no, if 2026 doesn't work out, no, you'll see in 2030.
Right.
It's like, no, dude, you've been selling me this golden generation for 4 years. What happened?
Yeah.
So I have that fear.
And I do think that the bar is, and this is relative, right? The bar is relatively low to get those people's interest.
Very low.
Right, low in the sense of like, put in a couple good performances. Yeah, I mean, and then now as a knowledgeable soccer person, I'm like, if we can get even to the quarterfinal, it might be kind of a miracle. But even if that, to those people, a quarterfinal is like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't we be in a quarterfinal? We're the United States, we're good at everything or whatever. That is like the heart. I mean, I was just Fox has been posting classic World Cup highlights and games of it, and I just saw the one against Germany where Greg Berhalter hits a ball and it hits off.
Yeah,
that would have been a red and a penalty, and maybe we
in the semifinals.
Yeah. So, but those the moments, it's really, that's kind of it. Just like the moments. Landon's goal against Algeria, Jermaine Jones's goal against Portugal, like those moments, like 22 didn't really have much of that. And if we can just kind of get a couple of those, it could change the trajectory of the sport in this country. So it's a lot of pressure to put on these young men. Yes.
That's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping, all we can do is hope. That's basically it. But I want to make sure we talk about this because
Italy didn't qualify for World Cup. I don't know. There we go. That's the one I was looking for. Anyway, Italy didn't qualify.
Yes.
And as a deeply Italian man,
yes.
This I look, there's a when I'm watching the game and I'm like, it's not, of course it's gonna, when Moise Kean had the break and he had the 1v1 against the goalkeeper, I'm like, this is it. This is finally, we can close this chapter of disappointment and sadness for the Italian national team. And then, you know, and that was with the red still, right? The red had already happened. And once he missed that, I'm like,
it's happening.
This might happen. It's
happening.
As a comedian and as a, you know, soccer personality working in soccer, as soon as he missed that shot, I'm like, okay, I got to get the tweets ready. The Italy missing the World Cup tweets ready, because this is seemingly looking very, very likely. But we talk about I always kind of go back to this. I haven't been here for a couple weeks. I don't know if this was mentioned before, but I always go back to in 2 years ago, Alexis hosted an event for NYCFC. It was a 10-year anniversary thing with Pilo. Pilo was there, a couple other former NYCFC guys. And after it was a nice thing. Got to meet Pilo. Very nice guy. And after the event was over, they did a Q&A. Fans started asking questions to Pilo, and of course, they would love to ask Pilo. And one guy asked a really great question. He was like, where do you feel the state of Italian soccer is and like development? And I thought Pirlo was going to come back with, you know, it's been a rough patch, but we're figuring stuff out. He was like, no, it's bad. It's bad. Italy is not developing players. And it's just like, whoa, Andrea. And then you get to this game against Herzegovina. And you know, clearly Pirlo was on to something. But what your immediate
immediate thoughts? I'm gonna try to stay calm.
Okay.
And where you were here, you guys had the immediately after the beautiful Miss Cupo here.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
And she did a great job explaining the macro and all the problems that Italian soccer is going through, which is part of the problem that similar to what we talk with the USMNT, the talent is not where it should be. Because teams are not, it's not that they're not developing players. There's like when they reach a point in age when they need to, the clubs need to give the players the opportunity to jump to the first team and play them.
Yeah.
They don't do it. And
this example. Go to RSL. Go you won't have that problem.
To Red Bulls. Go to Red Bulls. Yeah. We should take Mastroeni or Michael Bradley to coach in Italy. Milan has this kid that is called Francesco Camarda. He's 17, just turned 18. Prodigy. One of the best talents since Francesco Totti. Mm-hmm. He's been scoring goals since he was a baby. And right now, since last year, 17 years old, he started playing with the U21. So he's been playing 4 years ahead. And he's the number 9 goal scorer of the U21 at 17 years old. He's from Milan. Milan, instead of telling me, hey, dude, yeah, you're the scorer of the U21. Come here, play for us, the first team. They loan him to Lecce to sign Santi Jimenez.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's Italian soccer in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get the F out of here. What are we doing? Okay, I'm becoming Taylor.
No.
What are we doing?
Also, don't yell at our boy, Santi. He was just on the show.
It's not
too.
Santi. It's not about Santi.
Right.
It's an example like, why are you bringing a foreigner? Just give your Italian players the opportunity.
Seems easier. Save money.
They're not developing players. They're not bringing... At one point we had Roberto Baggio, Alessandro Del Piero, and Francesco Totti on the same squad. We had at one point our defense, our backline was Fabio Cannavaro, Paolo Maldini, and Alessandro Nesta. Mm-hmm. We have no talent. The kids are getting lost. And Italy has a good U21, U20, U19. They're winning European championships. Yeah, yeah. But then the clubs don't give the kids that next step. They're afraid of playing the kids. Yeah, yeah. And the academies, now, and it's that's what people say, Guardiola ruined the game, because Italy always had those free flow players, Cassano, Totti, Del Piero, those number 10s. Mm-hmm. There's like, go, 1v1, go. No, now it's like, no. Just like, as soon as you get there, just cross it. Or yeah. Just turn the ball and recycle. No, just go attack. Just let the kids play.
It's weird to go to that they evolved to this, right? I mean, like missing three consecutive World Cups, but it isn't, you can understand like several of the countries making World Cup, even the U.S. missing in 2018. Yes. Like you're going to have those
credit
slip-ups.
To the U.S. They miss the World Cup and they change everything
exactly,
immediately.
Exactly.
In Italy, the same federation stayed. He resigned last week because, I mean, it was impossible. But he's been there after failing in 2018, failing in 2022. And it's not just the three World Cups, Christian. It's they won in 2026 and 2006.
Yeah,
2010, out in group stage. 2014, out in group stage. It's five World Cups with you've been basically non-existent.
Yeah.
It's the problems are... Everybody sees it. But again, the federation, the agents, it's all business. Yeah, business. Yeah. They don't care about the development of the player as long as the pockets are filled.
All right. Well, Michele said it himself. Capitalism is the problem. We got to the bottom. But I mean, it's absurd to have the history and the player development that you have in your past. And you would the easy thing you would think is like, well, this generation of players is obviously going to pass that knowledge. They're going to become the next coaches and everything. And they're going to be and it's like, no, that is really, there's this bit. It's like, you know how Michael Irvin being like, we lose the recipes.
I know. We lost Italy. All the Italy. You cannot lose recipes in Italy.
You cannot. No. What's going on? That's ridiculous.
I'm going to close with the last example. Fabio Capello. Do you know? Obviously,
yeah,
you know
of course,
Fabio Capello.
England manager at one point.
He
yeah.
said, in Italy, a player like Lamine Yamal would have gotten lost.
Yeah.
Barcelona gave him the opportunity to play 16, 17, right? And the first team. Mm-hmm. In Italy, those players don't get the opportunity. They don't get the opportunity. That if a Lamine Yamal would have been born in Italy, he would have ended up being like a Serie C, Serie B player, never making the jump because the teams don't give opportunity to these young players. Even if you can see that they're good enough.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not if you're old enough, it's if you're good enough, right. Period. And in Italy, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, like, as far as, I mean, I've watching, especially Golasso and like learning more about Serie A, because I didn't grow up watching it,
yes.
But you clearly see the frustration in people like Marco, Grella,
yeah.
And like the frustration of the not willing to, and even as far as even competing with other leagues, right? There's less kind of a risk. There's less kind of excitement. And yeah, it's easy to... Yeah, Lamine Yamal, the child prodigy is a great story and we would love to see that. And it'd be nice to see that in Italy as well. So it's a shame. All right. Michele Giannone, thank you so much for joining me, brother.
I love this button.
You absolutely crushed it. Next time you're interviewing Messi, feel free to introduce that button to your sideline. Post-match interviews. You know what? You were mentioning Messi and I thought one of the cool things... was, I don't know who he did this interview with, but the one where he said he regretted not learning English.
Yes. With an Argentinian.
Yeah. But I thought it was a vulnerable level of insight that he never usually shows. And it was actually interesting because I know, I think his kids speak English now and all that stuff. And I thought it was like, oh, okay. There's something about this time in his career. And maybe in Major League Soccer, he can... Because he doesn't have, I mean, what does he need to do any press for, really? Unless he's like...
No, and I think when Messi leaves, he's still going to be very involved in Major League Soccer. Because I think his family has made it very clear and he has made it very clear that they want to stay in Miami.
Yeah.
They love the city. And he has equity now on the team.
Of course,
and he's going to be one of the owners when he retires. That's part of his deal.
Yeah.
So we're going to have Messi for a long time here. And honestly, like I'm telling you... And behind the scenes and off camera, great guy. Like you wouldn't even think the way he acts, He's just one of the guys. Yeah. It's really crazy to see him act when the cameras are not on him.
I love it. Well, if he wants to show that side, he is more than welcome on the Cooligans podcast.
I'll tell him. I'm going to have dinner later with him.
Okay, as you do. I mean, that's your thing. I mean, we, you know, but I love that you haven't changed. So I love,
yeah. I love Messi didn't change me.
The humility is always there. Michele, thank you so much for joining me. Let people know, obviously, where to follow you. And obviously, they can see you on MLS on Apple TV every weekend.
MLS on Apple TV. I mean, La Previa every Saturday with Ramses Sandoval and Miguel Gallardo. Mm-hmm. 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We have the basically, La Previa is the pregame show. We just don't cover the game that we're going to broadcast. We do it, but we do it from the game that we're going to broadcast. For example, we are going to do it from, we have Atlanta Nashville this Saturday. We're doing that game. Ramses, phenomenal play-by-play, English and Spanish. Yeah, Miguel Gallardo, phenomenal great. Analyst. And I'm on the field, sideline, as always. But we do the pregame show, which is an hour pregame show, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we just don't cover that game. We cover the whole league. It's a pregame show for the whole match day. And we do it from a different stadium every weekend. We were in Miami last Saturday. We're in Atlanta this Saturday. You can find me there. And I am not much do social media, but I'm there at Michele G3 in Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky is different. I think it's Michele dot Giannone.
Okay.
So Michele is Michelle with one L.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can find me there. I try to reply all the time, but I try to not go into Twitter that much or whatever it's called nowadays.
I barely open it, but what are you gonna do?
But
I just think as far as the word tweet. Like I try to be on Blue Sky a lot more, but the word tweet, I can't go with skeet. That's not
that a thing?
That's a thing. They want to go skeet. I'm like, that's not, I don't want to, that's not part of my vernacular.
I really like the soccer discourse in Blue Sky.
I like it too.
It's really good.
But I think we should call Blue Sky skeets, like, or posts. Skeet. We call them, let's just take tweets.
Bluey.
That's our word now.
A bluey.
A bluey. Going to confuse all the children who love this show.
I love Bluey, by the way. I watch Bluey, and I'm 41 years old.
Okay. I watch Bluey with my two-year-old.
I watch it by myself.
Three. Okay, so you're welcome to hang out and watch Bluey with my son. He loves it too. So everybody, thank you so much for hanging out. We appreciate it. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Make sure, what else? Follow us on Blue Sky and all that stuff. Hit like, hit subscribe on the YouTube video. And also, just a reminder, Alexis and I will probably, I'll mention it again on Thursday, but Alexis and I will be your MCs for the Premier League Fan Fest this weekend at in Tampa. So we're excited about that. Hanging
That's
out
great.
With those legends out there. So we'll see you this weekend if you're going to be out at the Premier League Fan Fest. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Michele Giannone, un placer, hermano. Siempre lo agradezco. Take care, everybody. Peace.